In Vancouver, I am Plante on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. The acclaimed and best-selling author Jane Urquhart joins me now. She has just published a new novel, Sanctuary Line, that has gotten great reviews. Set today, the book tells a story of a family going back to the 19th century in Ireland and Ontario. The lead character in the novel is Liz Crane, an entomologist who has moved back to the family farm to study the monarch butterfly in a center close by. The war in Afghanistan also hits close to home. Jane Urquhart has received the Governor General's Award, the Trillium Book Award, as well as other honors and honorary doctorates and the Order of Canada. She has written numerous books, including a collection of short fiction and four books of poetry. As well, she recently published a biography of Lucy Maud Montgomery for Penguin's Extraordinary Canadian Series. Sanctuary Line is her seventh novel, following number one national bestsellers A Map of Glass and The Stone Carvers. The book is published by McClelland and Stewart. Next month, she'll be appearing at least three events at the Vancouver Writers and Readers Festival, including a headlining event, an intimate evening with Jane Urquhart, the 20th of October. Visit writersfest.bc.ca for more information and tickets. In Vancouver now, please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Jane Urquhart. Good morning, Ms. Urquhart.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
What's Liz like?
Well, Liz is very unlike me, which is something that is intriguing, because when you're writing in the first person, it's difficult sometimes not to slip into your own voice, out of the character's voice and into your own voice. But Liz is, she's a scientist. I have to confess that my physics marks caused both my science teachers and my mother to turn pale, and my biology marks were not much better.
Yeah.
She's a kind of quiet person. She doesn't have any kind of public life, and her interest, as you mentioned, and her life, in fact, is spent studying the migratory patterns of the monarch butterfly. She's an entomologist.
Now, do you have to do research for a book like this?
Well, I did, but I did less research for this book than I've done for my previous books, for the simple reason that this book is set in the present, and that is a bit of a departure for me. Often, at least some parts of my book are set in the past, and you would argue that some parts of this book are set in the past as well, but they're the past examined from the viewpoint of the present as opposed to the past examined from the viewpoint of the past. And so I didn't have to do that kind of historical research where you need to know what the shoes of the time looked like or the gloves or whatever, because these were tales told in the present by a person who was trying to make a particular point. Having said that, though, I of course had to do some research of a scientific nature, and I'm lucky in that I have a son-in-law who's a biochemist, and he was able to help me with that, and that probably explains, if there is accuracy in that regard, that's likely where it comes from, judging by my science marks.
Where the book is set, how far do you live from that?
I guess it would be about 250 miles. I'm far enough away that I can sort of see it clearly. By that I mean in my mind.
Yeah.
Obviously, I can't see it from where I sit. But close in many ways. I was married to a young man who was killed in a car accident, actually, and he came from Essex County. So I know I spent a great deal of time there. Also, it's kind of mirrored in a way. It's like a mirror county for me, because where I do live is on the edge of Lake Ontario, not on the edge of Lake Erie. And so I have a great lakeside experience strong in my daily life. And, of course, Liz herself is on the edge of a great lake when she's telling this story and remembering these things and watching the migrations of the monarch butterfly, because they do fly. They take off from the north side of the Great Lakes and fly across the lakes in order to get down to Mexico, which is their destination.
When you start a novel, what comes first, the setting, the characters? You're known for as a writer where setting factors a great deal in the books.
Yes, setting does factor a great deal in the book, but it isn't really what starts me. It's what keeps me going. It's usually something that has intrigued me. And in the case of this book, there were two things that were intriguing me. One of them was the fact that we'd entered a combat role in Afghanistan. And when I say we, I mean not only Canadians had entered a combat role, but Canadian women. And that is something new. And it was on my mind. Not because I was choosing to have it on my mind, it just was there, and I couldn't really make it stop being there. And the other thing that was on my mind is something I see every summer, and that is the migrant Mexican laborers who work in the fields around both my place and, of course, all over Essex County, which is a very important fruit and vegetable region in Ontario. And so I start a novel with a couple of things intriguing me, and then I write the novel often to find out why those two things are intriguing me, or those three things, because I have no idea when I begin. I just know that they're on my mind, they're there for a reason, and I have to find out what the connections are.
Do you keep the reader in mind while you're writing?
No, not the first draft.
No.
The first draft is closer to what you do when you're a child and you get two stones in the sandbox and you give them each a name and then something happens between them. Or I suppose for a boy, that would be two trucks.
And then when do you think about how it'll be received? Or do you think that at all in the
I
process?
I don't really think that. I try my best not to think about that while I'm working, because I, of course, put the manuscript through several different versions and drafts, but after it's finished, I, of course, can't help but think about and worry about how it's going to be received, because it's not only potentially humiliating for me, but also for anyone connected to me.
Yeah, but I'm sure people around you, people that you led into the process that read the drafts along the way, they tell you if it's good or not, do they?
Well, they don't tell you if it's good or not. They tell you if they don't understand something.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the most important feedback you can get, because you understand everything. You know exactly what's going on. You're the author. You're making it up. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the reader understands what's going on. So that if there's something that just isn't adding up, that's brought to your attention. And that happens more often than you'd think. And nobody ever tells you really what to do about it. They just point out to you that this is not clear. Like, who is this person, and where did that person come from, and why are they there? Well, as the author, obviously you know, but you haven't given the reader enough information for them to understand what's going on, and that's the kind of feedback that I get.
Now, as you go on a book tour, you meet readers along the way, do you?
Oh, many, many.
Yeah. Well, how do you take it when they sort of misinterpret something that you've written? I'm sure that happens.
I'm trying to think of a specific instance of that. I don't really think that, with the exception of one woman who believed that my novel Away was written about her family, I don't really think I've had that happen. Mostly the readers who come out to the readings and to the public events are people who want to love you, I find, which is very gratifying, of course. They've already read the books in question, and they're very enthusiastic about them, and they just they often are there to tell you precisely that, which is so gratifying and lovely, you know, to think that people will make the effort to come and meet you and express their pleasure at reading your work.
What about your books becoming, say, taught in schools and the sort? Did you get to read some of the essays that people write about your books?
Yes, oh yes, I have, many times, yeah.
What's that like?
It's weird.
Yeah.
Because, of course, there's a teenager still alive and well in me, and a young university student alive and well in me still as well. And, of course, I have a daughter who in fact is doing her PhD right now, but not in English. It's a strange feeling, because especially during my own childhood and youth, one never anticipated that we would be studying Canadian literature at all, never mind anything that I would write. So we didn't, you know, there were no courses in creative writing, no courses in Canadian literature, no, in fact, few courses in Canadian history. So it's of course wonderful to know that it is going on, but at the same time it's a little embarrassing in a way.
Yeah. In your part of the world, is farm life disappearing as it is in the book?
Yes. I think it's not just my part of the world. I think it's the world, period. I think it's disappearing globally, and I think it's a terrible problem. Or the kind of farm life that created a type of agricultural person that is becoming extinct almost. It's, I think, tragic. And the only thing that gives me hope is the rise of this wonderful kind of eat locally, this kind of campaign that's going on now that seems to have just sprung up out of the collective unconscious where, you know, people are being encouraged to eat food from smaller farms. Because otherwise, the corporate farming world is going to take over everything. And I think it's terribly sad.
The other thing about the book that it has is this relationship that Liz has with her cousin.
Uh-huh.
What was your relationship like with your cousins?
Oh, I had many, many cousins. I had dozens of cousins my age.
Yeah.
So that relationship is, I mean, it's not based on any particular cousin, I hasten to add. But on the other hand, I certainly understand the relationship between cousins who are in the same sort of geographical area. There, it's a very strong relationship because it doesn't have the problems of sibling rivalry attached to it, but it does have that kind of closeness of family experience. So it's a lovely relationship.
You mentioned earlier that you were intrigued, constantly intrigued by an aspect of our involvement in Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan, and that's the role of women. It's obviously changed the face of the war. Do you think it changes how wars are fought in the future?
Well, I mean, it's not unprecedented, as you know. For instance, Israeli troops have had female participants for a long time in a combat role, that kind of thing. I don't see it that way, because I believe that, I mean, first of all, I would hope that all wars would stop being fought. That would be really helpful, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But given the fact that that's not likely to take place in my lifetime anyway, by the looks of things, I don't see that involving female soldiers is going to make any kind of difference in the way that wars are fought, simply because soldiers are extremely well trained, and it doesn't matter whether they're men or women. It's the women are, I'm sure, as well trained as the men, and they're driven by duty. So I imagine that it shouldn't have any kind of huge effect on what happens.
Do you find that this is a war that's being thought about a lot at home?
I think so. More than we would have expected, in a way, and I'm intrigued by that too. I'm intrigued by the kind of outpouring of emotion that happens around the death of a young person who then is transported home to Canada. It seems to me it's a little unsettling, I think, because for reasons that I don't quite understand, we didn't seem to feel that way when the peacekeepers were brought home. And they were. There were 180 peacekeepers, or, you know, when Canada was in a fully and only in a peacekeeping role, there were 180 people killed. And I wonder why there was no Highway of Heroes for them, but there has been a monument apparently erected recently.
I'm in my late 20s, and what makes me think about the war whenever I read about, say, the latest death or something like that, it doesn't really affect me, because where I live, we don't have someone who's, you know, in the neighborhood who's gone off.
Uh-huh.
But what really hits close to home is when I see the ages, and sometimes you see, you know, someone who's died and they're younger than I am.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that just strikes me.
Lots of time.
Yeah.
Yes. It's true. We haven't paid much attention to that since, I guess, probably the Second World War, and it's very unsettling.
You talk in the book as well about race.
Yes.
What does the book say about race?
I think it says that we are still having trouble with that. We've come a long way, but it still is something that affects us on a daily basis. Obviously, things are hugely different in this country in terms of racial acceptance and equality, but we're not quite there yet.
And how do we get to where we need to get?
I don't know. I think it will require a great deal of tolerance and understanding and education, but perhaps it's happening even as I'm talking to you, simply because we're lucky enough to be in constant contact with one another. And that's what I see in the schools now. I see the schools filled with many different kinds of faces, and I see kids walking together or holding hands from different racial backgrounds, and I see kids playing together without a thought for who comes from where. And I think it's very heartwarming to know that this is unfolding. So I suspect that as the generations continue, that this will become a non-issue. This is what I hope, anyway.
How does your writing affect your life in terms of how you deal with the people around you and the emotions that come with it?
There's two sides to writing. One is, I would say, vocation. The other side is career. Vocation being the actual sitting down alone in a room and making up stories about people who don't exist, and career being what I'm doing right now, which is you go out on the road and you promote what it is that you've written at the, not really insistence, but at the encouragement of your publisher, so that, and also because you want people to read it. I mean, after all, you publish because you want people to share whatever the experience is that's in the book. I think the public side of it affects people around me more than the vocational side. I mean, everyone around me is used to me locking myself away in a room for long periods of time and attached to either a typewriter or a computer, because I've been at it that long. But the public thing is a little harder because, whether you succeed or fail, or whether you're nominated for prizes or not nominated for prizes, it's harder, in fact. I mean, I'm very philosophical about it, but it's harder on the family and people close to you.
And I'm wondering about sort of the emotional part of it. I mean, when reading bits of your books over the years, you seem to understand how people feel. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, is that because you're emotionally developed, say?
Well, I think it's because, I hope anyway, that I'm very observant when it comes to the world of human emotions. And yes, I hope I'm also empathetic, but that would be for someone else to say, not me. The emotions do have an effect on the people in my life, for the simple reason that I sometimes become really involved, and this was a book in which I became really involved, to the extent that I was, for the first time, it actually caused me to kind of, I get even kind of choked up talking about it now. It got to me. I couldn't really talk about it in the way that I've been able to talk about my other books with my husband, without kind of getting choked up, and I'm not that kind of a person, so who knows what was going on. This book in particular, I found I couldn't keep the emotions that it drew out of me in the room. I took them with me when I went outside of the room.
And you mentioned earlier when you go on what you want to accomplish when you go on book tour like this. Is it enough for you that people buy the book, or do you really want them to read it?
I really want them to read it.
Yeah.
I would prefer them to read it. In other words, if it involves going to the library to get the book, or borrowing it from their neighbors, or whatever it takes, I mean, yes, that's the ultimate goal.
And you mentioned you've used a typewriter, you've used a computer. You use a computer now, I guess, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Do you ever write longhand?
Oh, yeah. I use the computer after I have finished the first draft, which is written in longhand in little notebooks, which you can carry with you. And also lose. You can lose them, too.
Yeah.
I never have, touch wood, but, it occurs to me now when we're so blasé, we've got backups of everything.
Right.
Those little notebooks can be left anywhere.
And do you write all the time? Like, are you writing now while you're on book tour?
No. I'm reading now, which
yeah.
is great pleasure. I, in fact, don't give up reading when I'm writing, but I'm able to read more now, and of course I'm avidly reading all kinds of wonderful things, and all sorts of fabulous new books out, and so it's kind of exciting. It's great. And I'm in bookstores a lot, so I'm able to get more books, and my luggage gets too heavy. And
is it a thrill to see your book in a bookstore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's always been a thrill. And the first time I saw my book in a bookstore, I almost fainted. Or in a library. The first time that I saw my book in a library, I actually looked myself up in the card file, which will tell you how long ago that was.
Yeah.
And that was an enormous thrill, because, of course, I'd been going through card files since I was about 4 years old, 5 years old.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Jane, and as I said off the top, I will finish this book, because I started it this weekend.
Oh,
and I
great.
Quite enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm delighted, and especially from a nonfiction male.
Thanks very much. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Jane Urquhart appears next month at the Vancouver Writers and Readers Festival. She's scheduled to appear at three events. The headlining one is on the 20th of October, an intimate evening with Jane Urquhart. Tickets and information can be had at writersfest.bc.ca. The book is called Sanctuary Line. It's published by McClelland and Stewart. It's author Jane Urquhart on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.